In the 50 years since our last meeting in Africa, the world has transformed in so many ways.
In this program, IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva kicks off the 2023 IMF World Bank Annual Meetings in Marrakesh with a curtain-raiser speech from Côte d'Ivoire.
Life expectancy is up, poverty is down, the International Monetary System has adapted to a flexible exchange rate regime, and technology has transformed the way we work, the way we are entertained, the way we communicate with each other. But inequalities within and across countries have increased, and we are facing an existential climate crisis. And growth has been on a declining path over the last decade.
It's the first time since 1973 that the annual meetings are held in Africa, and Georgieva says they're an opportunity to start paving the way to the next 50 years.
Our goal must be to build bridges to strong future growth that is both sustainable and inclusive. Being here in Abidjan on African soil, I take inspiration from Africa. On this continent, we can see, as under a magnifying glass, the challenges facing the whole world. But we also see its great potential. Africa has abundant resources, boundless creativity and energy, and it is home to the world's youngest and fastest growing population. To put it simply, a prosperous world in the 21st century requires a prosperous Africa. Advanced economies are rapidly aging, but they have abundant capital. The key will be to better connect this capital to Africa's abundant human resources, to inject more dynamism into the current anemic global growth outlook. Africa also makes the strongest case for building economic resilience. The COVID-19 pandemic, Russia's war in Ukraine, climate disasters, the cost of living crisis, political instability. These are the many faces of a shock-prone world. Their impact is most fully on display in Africa, as is the overwhelming necessity to better prepare ourselves for that more shock-prone world. And a prosperous Africa requires maintaining the most important bridge of all. The bridge that connects all countries, the bridge of international cooperation. As people in Abidjan would say, on et ensemble, we are together. During the meetings, we will make coming together meaningful for the people in our member countries. Let us start with the economic outlook. The world economy has shown remarkable resilience, and the first half of 2023 has brought some good news, largely because stronger than expected demand for services and tangible progress in the fight against inflation. This increases the chances for a soft landing, but we cannot let our guard down. While the recovery from the shocks of the past continues, it is slow and it is uneven. As you will see from our updated forecast next week, the current pace of global growth remains quite weak, well below the 3.8% average in the two decades before the pandemic. And looking ahead over the medium term, growth prospects have weakened further. and there are stark differences in growth dynamics. Stronger momentum comes from the United States. India and several other emerging economies, including Côte d'Ivoire, are bright spots. But most advanced economies are slowing down, and in China, economic activity is below expectations. Many countries struggle with anemic growth. Economic fragmentation threatens to further undermine growth prospects, especially for emerging and developing economies, including right here in Africa. This results in deepening divergence in economic fortunes between and within different country groups. Part of it comes from economic scarring. We estimate that the cumulative global output loss from successive shocks since 2020 amounts to $3.7 trillion as of this year. This loss is unevenly distributed across countries. The US is the only major economy where output has returned to its pre-pandemic path. The rest of the world is still below trend, with low-income countries being hit the hardest. Why? Because they have had extremely limited capacity to buffer their economies and their people. Divergence is also driven by many other factors. Differences in macroeconomic fundamentals, in the extent of dependency on fuel and food imports, in the share of goods versus services in the national economies, in the role of trade, and in the pace of the fight against inflation. All those affect both countries' policy choices and their economic performance. So what do we have now? We have a world where countries increasingly are marching to their own tune. And given these divergent trends, the fund has an important role to play to help countries identify policy choices and pursue successful growth strategies. Three priorities stand out. First, reinforce economic and financial stability. Fighting inflation is the number one priority. Thanks to the decisive actions of central banks and responsible fiscal policies, inflation in most countries is going down, but it is likely to remain above target for some countries all the way into 2025. High inflation undermines consumer and investor confidence, erodes the foundation for growth, and above all, it hurts the poorest people the most. Winning the fight against inflation requires interest rates to remain higher for longer. Our analysis shows that there is growing importance of inflation expectations as a driver for price increases. In other words, people expect prices to go up. Guess what? They go up. To help shape people's views of inflation, policymakers need to clearly communicate their goals, manage these expectations. They also need to safeguard financial stability. Soft landing expectations have lifted up asset valuations. But if we have a rapid reassessment of risks, for example, if inflation all of a sudden jumps up, that could lead to sharp tightening of financial conditions. Tighter credit is already putting pressure on many borrowers, commercial real estate firms in the US, in Europe. In China, continued stress on the property sector is a cause of concern. So too is the high leverage in parts of the non-banking financial sector. And banks are facing more precious, as you would see in our global financial stability report next week. What I want to stress, especially for our governor, Minister of Finance, is that we face significant risks on the fiscal side. To prepare for tomorrow's shocks and make vital investments, countries must rebuild their budgetary room for maneuver. In most cases, this means tighter fiscal policy, which can also support monetary policy where inflation pressures are still strong. And let me be clear, very little room for errors. The stakes are high because the shocks of the past few years have caused a further rise in debt burdens, including here in Africa, with little or no fiscal space left, and with rising debt servicing costs, many governments are facing tough decisions. It means what? Generating more and reliable domestic revenue, prioritizing spending, and communicating clear medium-term fiscal plans to build credibility and reduce debt levels. Well, macroeconomic stability is necessary. It's a prerequisite. It's not enough. That takes us to the second policy priority, laying the foundation for inclusive, sustainable growth through transformational reforms and building strong state institutions. History teaches us that poor countries become richer by educating people, putting in place good infrastructure, and ensuring effective governance with respect to the rule of law. These elements aren't static. Skills requirements change. Infrastructure today includes digital connectivity and sophisticated trade channels. And institutions are evolving. At the same time, these remain the three key pillars for growth and for prosperity. For all countries, especially for countries where creating jobs for young people is a paramount priority. Let me elaborate a bit further. Let's take the investment in people. For Africa, this means expanding high-quality education at all levels so that young people can seize the job opportunities of tomorrow. Right here in Côte d'Ivoire, the government is stepping up investments in young people while also taking measures to diversify the economy, so there are more opportunities for them. Second, we need to address infrastructure gaps, old and new. This, of course, means core physical infrastructure, as in the case with the new bridges here in Abidjan. But also, it means rural road networks, extending electricity coverage, and pursuing the green transition, adaptation to climate shocks, low carbon development. Digital also falls into the infrastructure bucket. Much of the same way electricity underpinned economic progress in the 20th century, digitalization can propel progress in the 21st century. It offers African countries the greatest chance to advance, to catch up, to go further. And we already see many examples in work in the region in recent years. We teach everybody about M-Pesa, Kenya's mobile payment service. It was expanded to six countries in Africa. It offers high payment efficiency and also financial inclusion. Or Hello Tractor. This is a platform that operates in several countries in sub-Saharan Africa. It allows farmers to rent tractors by text message. Africa has so much innovation bursting out. More investment in internet access will unlock the continent's creativity, but it also would improve public services, increase tax collection, and lift up the quality of spending. During the pandemic in Togo, they wrote a payment program called Novisi. It delivers emergency cash transfers to population in need using digital technology. Last but definitely not least are the improvements in governance and state capacity to foster inclusive growth. IMF analysis shows that emerging markets and developing countries pursuing package of reforms to cut red tape, improve governance, and reduce trade restrictions could lift their output by 8% in 4 years. Imagine what you can do with this 8%. I would put the reforms required to realize the full potential of the African Continental Trade Agreement in this bucket. Removing trade barriers and improving the border trade environment will push per capita incomes in the median African country up by 10%. Fully implemented, it is going to make Africa the largest free trade area in the entire world, delivering a big lift of living standards. And that brings me to our third policy priority, this of collective action, building resilience through international cooperation. At the very time when we need it the most, cooperation is weakening. The bridges that connect countries are corroding as trade and investment barriers are rising. A fragmented world is especially challenging for who? For emerging markets and developing economies because of their greater reliance on trade and their more limited policy space. Compared with other regions, the African continent stands to suffer the biggest economic losses from severe fragmentation. In no other area, the need for international cooperation is as evident as in addressing the existential threat of climate change. And thank you, President Ouattara, for bringing this up today in our meetings. The world has a responsibility to stand with vulnerable countries as they deal with shocks they have not caused. This is why we at the IMF have created the new $40 billion strong Resilience and Sustainability Trust. It provides long-term affordable financing to help low-income and vulnerable middle-income countries to undertake climate reforms. We have already approved 11 programs, and I'm very proud. 6 of them are on the African continent. 5 of them are in sub-Saharan Africa. And we are working hard in the next years to bring many more forward, including in Côte d'Ivoire. We also need to work together to help countries deal with debt challenges. 1/5 of emerging economies and more than half of low-income countries are at risk of debt distress. We have made progress. The common framework is starting to deliver, even if it is not delivering as fast as we want it to do. So let me give you the timelines. It took Chad 11 months to move from staff level agreement with the IMF to secure credit assurances so we can go to board. It then took 9 months for Zambia, 6 months for Sri Lanka, 5 months for Ghana. We are going in the right direction, we just need to speed up. And to speed up, we are working hard. We have created, together with the World Bank and the G20 presidency, the Global Sovereign Debt Roundtable. It brings for the first time all creditors, public and private, and the debtor countries, so we can figure out together how to accelerate debt restructurings. Even if we are successful, it would not be enough. More needs to be done to support vulnerable emerging market and developing economies. And this is why we urgently need to strengthen the global financial safety net. Currency reserves, central bank swap lines, and regional financial arrangements offer some insurance against financial crisis. But about 100 emerging and low-income countries, including almost all countries on the African continent, lack sufficient reserves and access to swap lines. So it is not surprising that they rely on support from the IMF, which stands at the center of the global safety net. In many cases, the IMF is the insurer of the uninsured. Since the pandemic, we have deployed nearly $1 trillion in global liquidity and reserves through the allocation of special drawing rights and through our lending. We have provided about $320 billion in financing to 96 countries through the Poverty Reduction and Growth Trust and through our lending for emerging markets. We have worked with economically stronger members to channel a significant share of their special drawing rights to more vulnerable countries, generating around $100 billion in new financing through our two trusts, Poverty Reduction and Growth, Resilience and Sustainability. And I want to thank you, President Ouattara, for your support that we can wake up dormant assets and make them work for those who need it. When you look at the IMF's lending capacity, a share of global external liabilities, it has diminished over the past few decades. Financial markets expanded, and the share of borrowed resources has gradually increased. To strengthen this core of the global safety net, we are calling on our member countries to bolster the IMF's quota resources. And we are also encouraging our stronger members to step in with more support for our capacity to provide interest-free loans to low-income countries. The fund, with its near universal membership, plays a vital role in bringing countries together. This means also expanding the voice of emerging markets and developing countries. I very much look forward to our members agreeing to have a third African chair on our executive board, from 2 to 3. So the voice of Africa is heard loud and clear in our boardroom. Let me conclude by returning to 1973, the last time the annual meetings were held in Africa. Back then, delegates faced many of the same challenges: high inflation, conflicts, and fundamental economic shift. Kenyan President Jomo Kenyatta finished his speech at the meetings with one word: Harambe, meaning pulling together in full cooperation. With the right policies and Harambe, we can build a bridge to a more prosperous and peaceful world. We can lay the groundwork for a half a century that is even more impressive than the last 50 years. Merci.
That was IMF Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva delivering her curtain raiser speech to the 2023 annual meetings in Marrakesh next week. She was speaking from Côte d'Ivoire. Go to imf.org to follow the meetings and find all of the flagship reports, including the World Economic Outlook, the Global Financial Stability Report, and the Fiscal Monitor. Look for more IMF podcasts on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.